Hello and welcome to this special science podcast from the 2011 AAAS Annual Meeting in Washington, D.C. It's February 21st. I'm Robert Frederick. In this short podcast, we'll hear about engaging citizens in large science projects, particularly those with lots of data. Science's Eli Kentish spoke with Chris Lintott, who directs the Galaxy Zoo and other citizen science projects at the Adler Planetarium in Chicago.
So, Chris, tell me about how Galaxy Zoo came about and what it is.
Well, Galaxy Zoo is essentially a website that asks people to tell us about the shapes of galaxies that we've imaged with the Hubble Space Telescope right now. And it came from one of those simple everyday problems. You know, you're trying to do your research, you've got too many galaxies, and so somebody had to sort through them. Tried to get a student to do it, and he heroically did 50,000 galaxies and then fell over. And so we needed more help. And we've recruited about 300,000 people over the internet over the last 3 years who have helped us classify. And the most amazing thing is that their results are more accurate than those that you get from a professional. And so we have not only a perfectly classified set of data, we have 300,000 people who want their names on the papers.
Tell us a little bit about what classification involves and why is this group of volunteers more accurate than professionals?
Well, we started off with 1 million galaxies. We've thrown in about 300,000 more from the early universe. What you're doing when you classify them is you're giving us information about the shape. So can you see spiral arms? Is there a bulge at the center of the galaxy? Is there a bar across the center? And these are all quite simple visual tasks that pull on the human ability for pattern recognition. So it's the same skill that allowed us to spot animals in the savanna, where you can use to pick out shapes, subtle shapes in galaxies. The reason that the people are better than professionals, actually there's a couple of things. One is that people are less distracted. As a professional astronomer, I know things about galaxies and I have prejudices and biases about how things should be. But actually the real thing we do is show the same galaxy to multiple people. And so collectively, you don't make an error. If I make a slip of the mouse, if I click the wrong button, then four other people will correct that. And so the data set's very, very clean. And that leads to some really interesting science.
What have been some of the important science or scientific discoveries that have come out of this citizen science project?
Well, I think some of the most fun are the unusual objects that the volunteers have discovered. There's one particular set called the peas, and they're called the peas because they're small, round, and green, just like the vegetable. And they were found in the background of some of the images. And a group of people who called themselves the Peas Corps got together and investigated these little galaxies. And what they turn out to be are dwarf galaxies. They're about a tenth the size of the Milky Way. But for reasons that we don't understand, they're suddenly converting all of their gas into stars right now. And they're the most efficient star factories anywhere in the local universe. What's incredible about the peas is that once you know they're there, once you know they're unusual and interesting, you can actually find them with computers. But we needed humans to look at the images and tell us that we should go searching for these things. And because people did that, they've written a whole new chapter in our story of where stars form in the universe.
And I understand that this so-called Peas Corps got together and did more than just identify the objects.
Well, the joy of this is I think the peas were found a few months after the project started, and we were completely overwhelmed with just the sheer volume of classification. So we, the science team, didn't pay any attention. So this group of people organized themselves. They had a systematic search for peas. They made a decision about what it was to be a pea. Not only did you have to be this particular green color, but you also had to be round. They pulled down the spectra from the professional interface of the data, discovered that the peas are green because they glow with light that's been emitted by oxygen. It's an oxygen emission light. And then they created their own site to sort through everything that had that particular color, and they picked out the round ones. And so by the time we paid any attention, we essentially had most of the paper written, or they'd already written most of the paper, and their authors on the paper as well, because they'd produced this perfect catalog of these really unusual galaxies. And all we had to do was come in and write the conclusion.
What sort of lessons are you learning about applying this citizen science model to do science and form these collaborations between the public and working scientists?
Well, we're trying to do this across a whole range of fields now, whether it's zoology or papyrology or climate science. There are several lessons, but one's absolutely fundamental, and that's the requirement not to waste people's time. People spend an awful lot of time on the Galaxy Zoo website classifying galaxies, and they did so right from day one. And so we had to be sure before we started that what we were asking people to do would actually produce useful science. And so that means splitting the problem down so that it's accessible to everybody. It's providing a clear interface. It's making sure that you have people committed to using the data that you're collecting for people. Otherwise, you can waste an awful lot of human time in something that isn't going to produce results. And we know that's important because when we ask our volunteers why they do this, they tell us that they're motivated by the desire to contribute to research. They like looking at the galaxy, sure. Some of them are interested in astronomy anyway, fine. Some of them are doing it because their teachers tell them to do it, that comes out too. But the overwhelming motivation is, I want to contribute to research. And so I think that places an obligation on us to make sure that these experiences are authentic and that whatever we ask people to do will make a contribution, even if only in a small way, to what we understand about the universe.
What are some other applications in science beyond identifying galaxies that you've been able to create?
I think one fun one that we've been running for about the last 6 months or so is called Old Weather. And this is an attempt to help climate scientists. What they want to do is test their models of how the Earth's climate behaves by looking at historical records. And if you can predict the past, then you get confidence that we can predict the future. But the records get very patchy when you get back before about 1920, particularly if you go away from Western Europe and the east coast of the States. But luckily, the navies of the world were very keen on weather observation. And in particular, the Royal Navy had a standing order that every 4 hours, the ships were to record the pressure, the sea temperature, the air temperature, the cloud cover, and the wind speed and direction. And so all of this information is lost in these ships' logs. And so if people go to oldweather.org, they get to see the ship's logs, they sign on board, they become crew on one of these ships, and as they follow it around the globe, they can rescue this climate information. And that data goes straight into the international databases that feeds the climate models. So that's great fun in itself. One of the joys of Old Weather is that you also get the human story of being on board the ship. I'm a big fan of Sub-Lieutenant Fardell from the HMS Minotaur, who got demoted for giving liquor to the men at Christmas. So, you know, that is only a tiny personal anecdote, but he's been rescued from the archives, along with the couple of million pieces of climate data we found so far.
What do you think is going to happen next for citizen science, and what are some of the challenges you see in the future?
The biggest challenge is that we're trying to keep up with the flood of data that's heading towards us, and that's true in astronomy as it is in many sciences. Just the sheer volume of information that we have about the world is increasing. And to deal with that, we've got to expand beyond just professional scientists. And so we have to recruit an army of citizen scientists, not only to do the basic tasks like classifying galaxies, although that will remain helpful, but to do more advanced tasks, to follow up on interesting objects, just like the discoverers of the peas did. Because without that, we're going to lose the ability to make discoveries. We're going to be swamped by data. We can still do statistical tests of our hypothesis, but the idea of maintaining a space for serendipity, a space for discovery in the data. We'll only do that if we have some help.
Well, thanks for talking to us, Chris.
My pleasure.
That was Science's Eli Kintosh speaking with Chris Lintott of Adler Planetarium on engaging citizens in science projects, particularly those with lots of data. This has been a special science podcast from the 2011 AAAS Annual Meeting in Washington, D.C. Special thanks to Kathleen O'Neill for her work on this show. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write us at sciencepodcast@aaas.org. The show is a production of Science Magazine. Jeffrey Cook composed the music, and I'm Robert Frederick. On behalf of Science Magazine and its publisher, AAAS, the Science Society, thanks for joining us.